Last episode, we sat at the bottom of the map. Lithography, leading-edge fabrication, and the CoWoS packaging that gates supply. And this episode, we climb one layer to the chip and the rack. The accelerator silicon, the memory that feeds it, and the networking that fuses thousands into one machine. And the through line you should carry the whole way is that at cluster scale, the binding constraint is no longer the compute core. It is the interconnect and the memory subsystem. I'll open on NVIDIA's silicon. The current volume part is Blackwell, the B200 die and the GB200 superchip that pairs two of them with a Grace CPU. But the part actually ramping through 2026 is Blackwell Ultra, the B300 and GB300, carrying roughly 288 gigabytes of HBM3E per GPU. The reference unit, though, is not a chip. It is the GB200 NVL72 rack, 72 Blackwell GPUs and 36 Grace CPUs wired by NVLink into a single coherent memory domain, 120 to 140 kilowatt liquid-cooled cabinet that software treats as one enormous GPU. That is the product now, the rack. The next architecture is Vera Rubin, the VR200, in the second half of 2026, NVIDIA's first part on TSMC's 3-nanometer class N3P, first on HBM4, first on NVLink 6 at roughly 3.6 terabytes per second per GPU, a dual reticle design near 336 billion transistors, delivering on the order of 50 petaflops of dense, low-precision inference. Treat the unreleased figures as previews. The HBM4 bandwidth target was reportedly trimmed when memory suppliers fell short of the original spec, exactly the kind of number that moves before silicon ships. Rubin Ultra follows in 2027, Feynman behind it, and the cadence is now firmly annual.
I'll take the merchant challengers, because the field below NVIDIA is thinner than the headlines suggest. The credible buy-it-on-the-open-market alternative is AMD's Instinct line. The MI350, launched mid-2025 on the CDNA4 architecture, carries 288 gigabytes of HBM3E and won real footprints at Microsoft, Meta, and OpenAI. Its successor, the MI400 series, arriving in 2026, the MI455X for training and inference, the MI430X for high-performance computing, jumps to HBM4 with as much as 432 gigabytes per part at roughly 20 terabytes per second of bandwidth and about 40 petaflops of low-precision compute. And crucially, AMD now ships it as a rack, Helios, 72 MI450 GPUs paired with EPYC CPUs, its answer to Vera Rubin. So AMD has closed the silicon and the system gap. What it has not closed is the software gap. And on most frontier training runs, that, not the hardware, is why it stays concentrated in inference and mid-market fine-tuning, a moat we devote episode 5 to. The other nominal competitor barely registers. Intel's Gaudi line never cleared meaningful volume. It missed even a $500 million revenue target in its first full year. And Intel has effectively pivoted to a new inference-focused data center GPU, Crescent Island, on its Xe3P architecture with 160 gigabytes of LPDDR5X rather than HBM, a deliberate bet to sidestep the memory crunch, but only sampling to customers in the second half of 2026. So the honest merchant landscape is NVIDIA dominant, with roughly 80 to 90% of accelerator revenue and effectively all frontier training, AMD the one real alternative, and Intel a distant third, still searching for a foothold.
Now I'll cover the custom silicon wave, which is the more structurally interesting threat, because it does not come from rival chip vendors at all. It comes from NVIDIA's own largest customers, building their own application-specific integrated circuits, ASICs, designed for one job rather than general use. Google is the pioneer, and by far the most mature. Its TPU, the Tensor Processing Unit, is seven generations deep with Ironwood, the TPU V7, an inference-oriented part with 192 gigabytes of HBM per chip that scales to over 9,000 chips in a pod. And Google announced an eighth generation in April 2026, split into the 8i for serving and the 8p for training. Google trains its own frontier models on its own TPUs in its own data centers, a genuine cost and independence advantage, and Anthropic is a major TPU customer. Amazon runs two lines,
Trainium for training, now at Trainium 3 on a 3-nanometer node with 144 gigabytes of HBM3E, and Inferentia for inference, its lever to cut the NVIDIA tax. Microsoft has Maya, the Maya 200 shipping from early 2026 with 216 gigabytes of HBM3E, and Meta has MTIA, now on an aggressive multi-generation inference roadmap. But here is the fact the headlines bury. Most of these firms do not design these chips alone. They lean on two merchant ASIC houses, above all Broadcom and secondarily Marvell, who supply the design methodology, the high-speed interconnect, and the input-output blocks. Broadcom is the lead partner behind Google's TPU and behind OpenAI's 10-gigawatt custom accelerator program. So the accurate framing is not hyperscalers are escaping NVIDIA. It is hyperscalers, with Broadcom and Marvell, are building their own chips, which makes Broadcom one of the most important firms in this entire story, even though its name never appears on a product you would recognize on your own person.
I'll round out the silicon layer with the alt architecture fringe and the economics, because both tell you where the design space is still open. Cerebras builds a wafer-scale engine. Rather than dicing a wafer into chips, it uses essentially the whole wafer as one processor with a vast pool of on-chip SRAM aimed at high-speed inference. It went public around May 2026, raising roughly $5.5 billion at a reported valuation in the $40 to $56 billion range. Grok makes what it calls an LPU, a language processing unit, a deterministic design for ultra-low-latency inference. And in a striking twist at the end of 2025, NVIDIA signed a licensing deal with Grok, reportedly worth around $17 billion. Samba Nova builds reconfigurable data flow units with tiered memory for very large models. None of these threatens the core today, but they prove the question of what an AI chip should look like is still genuinely contested at the edges. Now the economics that drive all of it. The hyperscalers occupy an awkward seat. They are simultaneously NVIDIA's biggest customers and its emerging competitors, and every dollar they spend with NVIDIA carries that famous gross margin, the so-called NVIDIA tax, straight to NVIDIA. Run enough of your own workloads on your own silicon, and you capture that margin internally. The financial gravity is real. NVIDIA's fiscal 2026 revenue came in near $216 billion, up about 65%, with a single quarter around $68 billion, of which roughly $62 billion was data center, at gross margins near 75%. The open interview question is precisely, at what scale does custom silicon's lower unit cost beat NVIDIA's ecosystem advantage? For most players on most frontier work, the answer is still NVIDIA. But the gap is the thing everyone is watching, and it is narrowing fastest at exactly the firms with the deepest pockets.
I'll take memory and the memory wall, which I'd argue is the real heart of this episode. Over decades, arithmetic throughput grew far faster than the rate at which we can move data in and out of memory. So you end up with monstrously powerful GPUs that spend much of their time idle, waiting for operands to arrive. The math is fast. Feeding the math is slow. And that gap is the memory wall. For AI workloads, it is frequently the binding constraint. What governs real throughput is often not how many flops the chip can do, but how fast you can stream the model's weights into it, which is memory bandwidth, and how much of the model you can hold at once, which is capacity. The industry's answer is HBM, high bandwidth memory. You stack many DRAM dies into a tower, connect them vertically with through silicon vias, and place the stack right beside the GPU, so a very wide, very short interface delivers bandwidth ordinary memory cannot approach. Every serious accelerator we have named is built around it. The roadmap runs HBM3 to the faster HBM3E that dominated through 2025, then to HBM4, which sampled in 2025 and rushed into mass production around February 2026, specifically to feed Rubin. And the supply story is as important as the technology, because only three firms make HBM, and the market is lopsided. SK Hynix is the clear leader, well over half of the market, and the lead supplier to NVIDIA, first to qualify on both HBM3E and HBM4. Micron has climbed to roughly a fifth, overtaking the third player on 12 high stacks.
Samsung sits in the mid-teens to low 20s, having lagged on qualification, but clawing back share as HBM4 ramps. On NVIDIA's HBM4 allocation specifically, the split runs roughly mid-50s Hynix, mid-20s Samsung, about 20 Micron. Three suppliers, one dominant, and the entire build-out rests on them.
I'll extend the memory story into its two consequences, the packaging tieback and the macro ripple, because both come up constantly. First, the callback to last episode. To physically seat those HBM towers beside the compute die, you need advanced packaging, and the dominant platform is TSMC's CoWoS, chip on wafer on substrate, which mounts the GPU chiplets and the HBM stacks together on a silicon interposer, acting as an ultra-dense wiring layer. A modern accelerator package is no longer one monolithic die. It is several compute chiplets ringed by 8 or more HBM stacks, because a single die hit the reticle limit, the roughly 850 square millimeter maximum a scanner can print in one exposure. And to go bigger, you stitch chiplets, which is what CoWoS L, with its local silicon interconnect bridges, does for Blackwell and Rubin. The point worth internalizing: accelerator supply is gated not by wafers alone, but by CoWoS capacity and by HBM, all three at once. TSMC roughly 10x'd CoWoS output from about 13,000 wafers a month at the end of 2023 toward 120,000+ by the end of 2026, and still describes it as effectively sold out. Second, the macro ripple, a favorite interview detail. Because the memory makers are pouring capacity into lucrative HBM, they are producing less ordinary DRAM, which has dragged the whole memory market into shortage and pushed prices up on everything down to consumer modules. The HBM market roughly 50%ing in a year, from the high 30 billions toward the high 50 billions, with demand growing on the order of 130% year over year, and analysts projecting the total HBM market near 100 billion by 2028. So the AI boom is literally making laptop RAM more expensive, and the memory subsystem, bandwidth, capacity, and the packaging that attaches it is the constraint that most often decides who wins at inference.
Before networking, I'll cover the workload shift that is quietly repricing this entire silicon layer, because it changes which constraint binds. Through 2024, the build-out was overwhelmingly about training, the giant pre-training runs. But the balance has flipped. Inference, actually serving models to users, was roughly half of AI compute in 2025 and is projected toward two-thirds in 2026 as enterprises move from pilots to round-the-clock agentic workloads, and inference-specific infrastructure spend reportedly more than doubled year over year. There is a paradox worth naming for interviews. The cost of a unit of model intelligence, dollars per token, fell on the order of 80% in a year, yet total spend exploded, a Jevons paradox dynamic where cheaper inference induces vastly more of it. This shift is exactly why the silicon roadmap is bending toward memory and away from raw flops. Watch the part names: NVIDIA's Rubin CPX and the inference-tilted SKUs, Google's TPU-8i for serving, Intel's Crescent Island with cheap LPDDR instead of HBM, and the whole alt architecture fringe, Cerebrus, Grok, Samba Nova, all aim at inference, because that is where the volume and the margin are migrating. There is a second driver behind the shift in scaling. Naive pre-training showed diminishing returns as the industry approached the data wall, so capability moved to a new axis, test time compute, the reasoning models that think longer at inference, plus mixture of experts designs that activate only a slice of a huge parameter count per token. Both put even more weight on memory bandwidth and capacity, because a reasoning model generating long chains of thought is streaming weights and a growing key value cache through the chip the entire time. So the strategic read is, the center of gravity is sliding from a small number of enormous training clusters toward a far larger fleet of inference machines. And on those machines, as I'll keep stressing, memory and interconnect, not arithmetic, set the ceiling.
I'll take systems integration and the rack supply chain, because the shift from selling chips to selling racks reshaped who actually captures the value. We keep saying the unit of compute is the rack, and the engineering reason is brutal. An NVL 72 or a Helios cabinet is not a box of cards. It is a coherent machine where 72 accelerators, the CPUs, the NV switch or UA link fabric, terabytes of HBM, the power delivery, and direct liquid cooling must all be co-designed, qualified, and burned in together. And time to deploy becomes a competitive weapon. The firm that can stand up a working pod fastest wins allocation. That integration work increasingly sits with two tiers. The volume tier is the ODMs, original design manufacturers like Foxconn, Quanta, Wistron, and Inventec, who build white box racks directly for hyperscalers and now account for the majority of server revenue, because a Google or a Meta would rather buy a bare design it controls than a branded system. Above them sit the OEMs, Dell and Supermicro leading, then HPE and Lenovo, who add integration, support, and speed to market for enterprises and neoclouds that cannot run their own factories. Dell and Supermicro have raced to be first to ship each Blackwell and Rubin variant precisely because that lead converts directly into orders. The number to anchor is scale. The AI server market reportedly ran on the order of $200+ billion in 2025, inside a total server market that grew enormously year over year. Treat those as analyst estimates that swing with how you define an AI server. The deeper point is that this systems layer is where the cooling and power problems we cover next episode first become physical. You cannot integrate a 140 kilowatt rack without solving liquid cooling at the cold plate and power delivery at the bus bar, which is why the rack, not the chip, is also where the data center constraints start to bite.
Now I'll cover networking, starting with the distinction that organizes the whole field, scale up versus scale out, because the jargon maps onto two physically different problems. Scale up means connecting the GPUs inside one rack or node so tightly they behave as a single processor. Scale out means lashing many racks together across a data center into a cluster of tens or hundreds of thousands of accelerators, and different silicon serves each. On scale up, NVIDIA's weapon is NVLink, a very high-speed direct GPU-to-GPU interconnect, paired with a switch chip called NVSwitch that lets every GPU in the domain talk to every other at full bandwidth. The current generation moves on the order of 1.8 terabytes per second per GPU, and the fabric knits together hundreds of GPUs. That is precisely what makes the NVL72 rack behave as one 72-GPU brain rather than 72 separate chips. And because NVLink is proprietary, it is a serious part of the lock-in. The open standards counter is UALink, a consortium effort meant to give AMD and the custom silicon camp an interoperable scale-up fabric to break that grip. On scale-out, there are two camps. One is InfiniBand, a specialized low-latency fabric NVIDIA owns through its Mellanox acquisition, long the default for large training clusters. The other is Ethernet, the same fundamental technology that runs the internet, open and multi-vendor and cheaper at scale, historically not tuned for AI's punishing collective traffic, and the structural trend is unambiguous. Ethernet is gaining. The bridge technology is ROCE, or DMA over converged Ethernet, which lets machines write directly into each other's memory over standard Ethernet with minimal overhead. And in mid-2025, the Ultra Ethernet Consortium shipped its version 1.0 specification, formally re-engineering Ethernet for AI and high-performance computing. Both UALink and Ultra Ethernet share one aim: pry interconnect loose from NVIDIA, just as the industry would love to pry loose CUDA.
I'll take the switch silicon and why this layer is where NVIDIA is most exposed. The champion of open Ethernet is, once again, Broadcom, whose Tomahawk 6 switch chip pushes 102.4 terabits per second on a 3-nanometer.
I'll explain why this matters so much. Then take the optics frontier, because the two are the same story told at different distances. Training a frontier model is as much a networking problem as a compute one. When tens of thousands of GPUs work on a single model, they must constantly exchange and synchronize partial results, collective communication, the all-reduce and all-to-all operations. And if the fabric between them is too slow, the expensive silicon sits idle, and your multi-billion dollar cluster runs at a fraction of its potential. The metric the architects obsess over is bisection bandwidth. Cut the cluster in half and measure how much data can cross the cut, the worst-case communication capacity of the whole machine.
and high bisection bandwidth is precisely what lets a cluster scale efficiently. This is why a GPU today is sold as part of a networked pod. The chip alone is nearly meaningless. What you buy is a tightly interconnected system where the wiring is engineered as carefully as the silicon. Now, optics. As clusters grow, more of the links between racks must be optical, light through fiber rather than electrons through copper, because copper cannot carry the bandwidth over distance without the signal collapsing. Today, most of this uses pluggable transceivers, little modules you slot into a switch that convert electrical to optical and back. And the suppliers there are Coherent, Lumentum, and the merchant module makers, with Marvell strong in the underlying optical DSP silicon. The problem is power. At AI scale, the energy spent just moving bits between chips is becoming a first-order constraint, and pluggables burn a surprising share of it. The emerging fix is co-packaged optics, bringing the optical engine directly onto the switch package, slashing the electrical distance and the wasted watts, where Broadcom and NVIDIA, the latter now backing Coherent with a reported $2 billion investment, are pushing hardest. Watch co-packaged optics. It is a strong candidate for the next great choke point.
I'll give you the mental model an interviewer is really probing for, then the dossier grade scorecard. Whenever you look at an AI workload, ask which of three resources binds it: raw compute, memory bandwidth, or interconnect. For frontier training, the giant runs, the answer is usually a blend, but interconnect and sheer cluster scale dominate because you are trying to make tens of thousands of chips act as one. So networking and bisection bandwidth are king, with memory bandwidth close behind. For inference, actually serving the model, generating tokens one after another, the constraint is very often memory bandwidth, because emitting each token means streaming the model's weights through the chip, so you wait on memory, not arithmetic. That is exactly why high bandwidth, high capacity designs, and clever memory architectures win at inference, and why low flop but well-fed parts can beat a higher flop part that starves. The chip that wins is the one you can feed and the one you can connect, not the one with the biggest arithmetic number on the spec sheet. So the scorecard for this layer: NVIDIA leads on silicon and on the NVLink interconnect, with roughly 80 to 90% of accelerator revenue and effectively all frontier training. AMD is the one credible merchant challenger, with Instinct and Helios. The hyperscalers, armed with Broadcom and Marvell, build custom ASICs: Google's TPU, Amazon's Trainium, Microsoft's Maya, Meta's MTIA, to escape the NVIDIA tax. SK Hynix, Micron, and Samsung control the HBM that everything depends on, and an open coalition fronted by Broadcom and Arista is fighting to break the network lock. The frontier moved from the die to the package to the fabric, and the unit of compute is now the cluster, not the chip. Next episode, we follow the power cord out the back of that rack, into the building, the cooling, and the grid, because once you have wired thousands of these 100-kilowatt racks together, the question stops being, can we get the chips, and becomes, can we get the power? Episode 4, AI data centers, power, and cooling.